make sure you stay tuned. Mr. Jay Cornick will be right with us. He is slightly detained, running just a few minutes behind. So we're going to continue with the world of Big Ben until he gets here, and hope you enjoy.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now time for our public affairs show here, the new WHFR Journal, local news and views. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is Friday, the 27th of February, 2009, almost at the end of the month. Boy, that month goes by so fast. It's like there's fewer days or something. Amazing how that works out. Of course, in Michigan, some, if not all, of the snow has melted now. That's always a good feeling. The spring thaw is not quite here, so don't plan ahead for that. We are local news and views, you know, folks. We're getting to digging into the bones and taking a look at the skeletons in some closets, and we're having a lot of fun here talking about what goes on in our community and what's important to us. And sometimes it is very important. Some things that even happen nationally. And we have covered, of course, topics about Iraq and Afghanistan because we have a lot of people locally, not only involved in our military forces that are over there, but or indirectly related to forces over there, but people who come from that area came here as U.S. immigrants and guest students and so on. And so we have to talk about that. Ecology issues, of course, that involves all of us. It's just one planet, you know, and wherever you go, hey, pollution in one country might become pollution in another country, especially real close to Canada here. I think some acid rain in the state of Maine comes from Canada, actually. So got to keep that in mind. And today we have a very special guest in the studio with us live, and his name is Ron Babin.
Babin.
Okay, Babin. And I talked to Ron on the phone before. We never mentioned your last name before, and he just got here, and I just got here, and we ran. We just met in person for the first time. So, Babin.
Babin.
Babin. Okay. It's French or something.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I knew that. Okay. But what about what Ron? Well, he is the deputy director of a, I guess we have to say it's an association, but it's in effect it's a organization that is supporting a cause and has a mission. It wants to see political change in Michigan, and don't we all? I think that's what a major political candidate said we needed. Of course, the question is what kind of change and how do we get there? This is an idea that is not new, though. I've mentioned on this show before, we've never actually had a guest here. It's always been myself quoting from a couple of books that are out there. I will mention the topic now, which is the fair tax. And specifically, Ron Babin is with Michigan Fair Tax Organization. Yes, there is a Michigan version of the fair tax that is very similar, if not exactly like, the federal model. And let me explain about the fair tax just very briefly as I understand it. The idea has been around for quite a few years. Ron probably knows how many. But at least the last 5 or 6 years, there is a member of Congress who has introduced the fair tax provision as a resolution that could be approved and made into law. That's all it would take now. And he has just done that again, like a week or two ago, for the 2009 Congress, I know.
H.R. 25.
H.R. 25. There you go. Nice, easy to remember number. House of Representatives 25. And in the last go-round of presidential campaigning, clearly there was one Republican candidate, if not two, but certainly I know Mike Huckabee made a lot about his support for the fair tax. Probably Ron Paul was in favor of it, too.
Also, Mike Gravel on the Democratic side.
Okay. That's right. Yes. Yes.
It is a bipartisan effort.
Mm-hmm. So, Ron, tell us, because you're the person that's involved in Michigan here, but for our listeners, you go over the, there's about 5 or 6 different twists and turns of the fair tax, and it is, in fact, and so maybe you can explain this to people, it is, in fact, a whole new way to get money for the government, for the services that it provides. So why don't you just start at the top and explain what the proposal in general is. It's probably similar to federal and state, and then we'll get into the state.
Sure. Well, basically, it is a consumption-based tax. So it's not new in the sense that, you know, we do have consumption-based taxes today, the Michigan sales tax and so on, but it is new at the federal level. So we would like to shift from the taxation of productivity to the taxation of consumption, which is what you benefit from. That's the major philosophical difference in it. Today, if you go out and you pay in somebody's garage, you get paid $1,000 for it. Your life hasn't changed at all. You haven't benefited from all that work until you actually do something with that $1,000. So that's the point that we want to be able to tax people, is when you benefit, not necessarily just because you put some hard work into something that the government should take a piece away. So at the federal level, it is a new tax from that sense. But the idea is that it removes the cost of the taxation we have today out of the production process, because all of those taxes, even your personal income tax, comes from the employer. It's part of your gross wage that they have to pay. So all of those costs go through the business process and increase their wholesale price of being able to produce anything to sell it to anybody, whether it's a retailer or another wholesale manufacturer. And we want to be able to reduce those costs so that we can produce our products and services less expensively here in the United States or here in Michigan, and be able to sell more of them to other people, and stop trying to make other people pay part of our tax burden, because in a world competitive environment, we're just no longer able to do that, and it's really, really hurting us. We're losing so many jobs because of that taxation system.
So the first big deal that really impressed me is, and especially around this time of year, is that it would eliminate the whole branch of government, which we call the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service.
Correct.
There would be no income tax forms to fill out. In fact, there's no withholding that would come out of your paycheck each week, which for some people, maybe 25-30%, even though you may get some of that back later, they take that out. In fact, we've gotten, I think, in this country, horribly used to the fact that our checks are the amount they are each week. In fact, they're much bigger, by maybe as much as a third bigger. We just never see that money, so we don't even think about the fact we really earned all that money, but we don't see it. I guess there's ways to change your deductions or something to see more of it and then have to pay more later, but that's...
Right.
And I just hate the fact, and I've mentioned it many times on the show, is that I have to spend so many hours. I use a computer program to compute it, but I've got to get all my bills together, and it takes 2-3 days of my life, 8-10 hour days, doing this. I don't have any problems. I have a very simple... situation, you know, one income only and no stocks or dividends or weird stuff. And it still takes this amount of time. And I pity the people, number one, who don't know computers. Number two, I have to pay extra money to those service companies to do these forms. And you always feel sort of like a criminal there too. Is it? Or all the stress, like, oh my gosh, what am I going to owe? Or will I just get 10 cents back, please? And you know,
you can never do it right.
No, no. And a lot of people hate the fact, if you know of any of the loopholes, and how many pages of tax code, 11,000, or is it more than 60,000 pages?
Yeah, it's over 60,000 pages.
That's what I'd say, 60,000. How to get merely 11,000. Few people have ever read everything, including those tax advisors, including the IRS agents sometimes. Even their 800 toll-free number advisors, I understand, are not necessarily promising to know accurately what's really going on.
That's right. Yeah, many of the former IRS commissioners have said, you know, that it's just almost impossible for anybody to be able to completely interpret properly the best of their abilities. You'll even look at some of the president's nominees for several cabinet positions and the tax issues that they've had. You know, that they've said, look, you know, this was an honest mistake. We did everything we thought we were doing right, you know, but we just didn't realize that this had occurred. You know, no matter what you do, you put yourself at risk because it's almost impossible to catch everything and do it absolutely right. Every year, I think it's Forbes magazine or Fortune or somebody that goes out and gets like 50 different major CPA firms to do a tax return. They give them the same tax return, and they get 50 different answers back. I mean, they do it year after year, and that really is telling. And yet we expect the average person in the street with a normal situation to be able to go through that process.
Well, and there's the fairness issue. And a lot of people say, oh, I love that deduction, let's say, for owning a home. For those people who can afford the mortgage payment at all, you know, you can deduct the interest to a certain extent, not really all of it, but a large portion of it off your income tax. But what about the people in apartments? I feel so sorry about them. I lived in an apartment for a while. I didn't have any deduction at all. Is that fair if you choose to live in an apartment rather than own a house?
Yeah.
Now, a house costs you a lot more money up front and long term. What an investment. And you know, but I don't see anything wrong with encouraging people or having an incentive to live in an apartment. It's less energy involved. It may be money that you could better invest, but I'm stressing the point of fairness too, that all these loopholes, all these exceptions, they're good for the people maybe that got them in that big 60,000 page tax code, but the other people don't have anything like that. And I just think that is patently, which means completely, unfair to do it that way. And so the fair tax, good name there, is basically fair in terms of you pay for what you consume. What you buy, there's going to be a tax there. Can you call it a sales tax?
It is a sales tax. It's a consumption tax.
Right. And everybody hates this, but the current estimate is to bring in the same amount of money to our government that it's getting now, that the sales tax to the federal government would be about 23%?
It's 23% of the total price that you pay, which is essentially, you know, we don't want to hide anything here and make people think we're twisting it.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually 30% when you look at it from a sales tax standpoint.
Because
when you sales tax, you're adding something on top of the purchase price of the item. So you buy
something
for a dollar, 30% would be 30 cents on that dollar.
Yes.
But that 30 cents represents 23% of the total $1.30. Okay, so that's an inclusive value, which is the way, it's only quoted that way because that's how we do the income tax.
Mm-hmm.
When you earn a dollar, they take the tax away from the dollar, so you take 23 cents off a dollar, you're at 77 cents.
So even the 6% sales tax in Michigan is really a little bit less than that. if you look at the inclusive basis, but sure. Right. But the point is, folks, and you say, well, I don't want that additional amount there. You're getting one third back of your paycheck that might already be withheld, if I understand correctly. So you get a ton of money there. And then it always comes up, well, what about the people that can't afford to pay that, low-income people? Because this would be a consumption tax on everything, right? Food, drugs, everything.
That's correct. But there is a prebate at both the federal and the state level. And the prebate essentially untaxes all households to their poverty level, which is based upon the number of people in their house. But that level is completely untaxed. Now, today, people say, well, I don't want to add, a 30% tax on top of my purchase of my food. But today, that tax is already included in the cost of that food because that 30% or the 23% total is including Social Security and Medicare, which is, was it 15.3% of each dollar that you earned, mm-hmm. including the employer's portion, because all of that goes through the business process. So, where we're really, this is not a new tax. It is simply replacing, which is what we've not done in the past, is to replace existing taxes with a different tax. We just keep adding new taxes. This is not a new added tax. Simply gets rid of what's there mm-hmm. and puts it in a different place where you can see it.
It should work out that you're paying pretty much the same amount into government. And for those people to say, no, wait a minute, I want a tax break. I want to pay less money. Well, in this terrible economic climate, which I want to talk to you about in a second and how it impacts this program. By the way, folks, if you just tuned in, we are talking to Ron Babin, it's B-A-B-I-N, who is the deputy director of MichiganFairTax.org. Right here in Michigan, they had a petition drive that we talked about that did not get onto the ballot last year. Our legislature had an opportunity to put it on the ballot, and they chose not to. And as I read things further about this, it would have helped so much bring business into Michigan as well as our country at the federal level. But we can do this before the federal government if we want to, right,
Absolutely.
Ron?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We hope that will be the case.
And even if the federal government does do theirs, we'll still have to raise money for Michigan government somehow, right?
Yeah. You imagine if Michigan was the model state. That the people looked all across this country and looked at Michigan to see, wow, what are they doing so right? Because our economy is mm-hmm. growing. If you look at all the examples of the jobs that have been brought into Michigan and expansions in the last, say, 3-5 years, many, many of those have been from giving tax incentives or some kind of special break to those businesses. And it proves, look at the entertainment industry, the film industry, and look what's happened there. And everybody touting what a great idea that is. If you could do that for those businesses, it proves that if you lower the cost of operating here in this state, they will come. And that why not do that for all businesses? Those businesses are only passing their tax cost on to their consumer. Mm-hmm. So why not let the consumers truly see what they're paying and allow all those businesses to flourish by lowering their cost of operating?
Yeah, let me just jump back. That prebate check you mentioned means that everybody that has a job that is going to be paying money out, but everybody that has a job would be a Social Security number and so on in the computer system of the federal government, just like those stupid little checks that some people got. Remember his tax rebate check? Was it $400 or something?
Yeah, 300, I think, per
year. 300, of course, I was at a level, $75,000 a year, but I didn't get one.
Yeah.
I wasn't even at the 250 or whatever. I'm not rich, but right. I didn't get one. But those didn't really help stimulate the economy at all. But my point is the government knows where you live.
That's right.
And if they want to decide to send everybody a check, they can do that. And just the cost of getting it in the mail or something. And these prebate checks as part of the Fair Tax Plan means that everybody, not just the poor people, right?
Correct.
Everybody gets, and what's the average amount you think? I read $700-$800 a month.
No, it's well, at the federal level, it could be that.
The federal level could be that, yeah.
For example, at the state of Michigan, essentially a single person, the national federal poverty level is about $10,200. So you'd simply take the tax rate, you multiply it times that, and that's if you spent $10,200, that means that $85 a month of that would be taxes you would have paid, and we're simply going to give you your money back. It's not a mm-hmm. handout from the government. It's
right.
your money that you would have paid right. and spent.
Supposedly for basic consumption, like the food that you have to pay tax on and the drugs that
right.
we're not paying taxes on right now. And again, folks, it's not for, unfortunately, for the people that don't have jobs. The homeless can get welfare or soup kitchens, or they can get other types of subsidies. For the people that are at jobs and earning money, they will get the appropriate. What about part-time people?
It actually does apply to all households.
Okay.
Even if you were not working at all, mm-hmm. you would still get that prebate, or at least your household would still get that prebate. So it essentially is money giving back for the people who are spending below the poverty level. Mm-hmm. If you spend at least the total poverty level, you would have a zero effective tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
And every penny you spend above that, it would essentially gradually increase.
Right.
So it really is a progressive tax from the consumption standpoint.
You know, I think some people would see this, and they shouldn't, of course, but they'll say, whoa, I'm going to vote for that because I'm going to get a check every month whether I work or not, whether I spend or not. Whoa, I want this. Of course, you got to spend money for food and other things that you need.
Right.
And so this is just a way to balance out the only inequity that I can see. Now, and other people may see problems. Oh, I want that mortgage deduction. Think of the big picture, folks. Okay, think of all the unfairness, all 60,000 pages of the special interest loopholes. This would be so wonderful, and not just for us individually, but for the country as a whole or the state as a whole in terms of business. It'll be, I cannot see how it wouldn't be a great business incentive. I just saw something the other day. Not only, it's not just a Republican plan, okay? Although many libertarians, like Ron Paul, even though he is a Republican theoretically or officially when he was running for president in the last primary, but ran also as a libertarian before, they want to see fewer taxes, smaller government, and so on. A lot of people, even Barack said that.
Visible taxes. Week. That's their main thing.
Right. But I think that could be a stepping stone. Once everybody has this consumption tax number, where it's 23 or 30 in their head, if the government wants more money, they got to go to 31.
That's right.
Or people will say, we think pretty good economic, let's go down to 29. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody in the whole country can get together and watch the big number, you know,
right.
Either up or down. And if libertarians can do small government, then it would drop down to 29 or 28. But finally, we all have a handle and something to focus on because we're paying it every day, that same amount, equally anybody that's buying stuff. And besides the usual libertarians and or Republicans, many Republicans endorse this. I think there's usually 40 or 50 signatures on the House bill each year that they want to see it go ahead.
We're up to 73, I think.
73 now. Yeah, great. Just because, and again, if Mike Huckabee liked it, isn't he a straight arrow Republican? And it is a good program, no matter, and this is what I point out, an endorser last week, or early this week, I saw the email from him, Dennis Kucinich, well known as, yes, he saw a flying saucer, but no, you know, great progressive liberal, of course, but actually more than a progressive Democrat from Ohio. He ran for, Democratic nomination too, as he always does. Yes, he's a little short, but he has a beautiful wife, so that it doesn't, he's got something going for him. He came out in endorsement of it. Okay, we've got somebody on the right. We got libertarians who are a little bit left and right. We've got Dennis Kucinich on the left.
And Mike Gravel.
And Mike Gravel, of course, who's not currently in government, I don't think. Is he? Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. But yes, he was for it, too. So we have an idea here that everybody should look more closely at.
Yeah.
Very closely. And in Michigan, we can look right here at the state of Michigan, and heck with the federal government, we can do things ourselves. And it wouldn't take much to do this. In fact, it's going to save the state money. They don't have the tax collection burden.
Yeah.
They don't have people that don't pay their taxes.
Yeah.
You can't escape paying taxes. You say, well, I got this business, cleaning windows or fortune telling on the side, and I just take the money and I don't report it. They still got to buy stuff. They had to buy their fortune-telling supplies, or their window-cleaning supplies. And so there's no more gray market of services. I just think it's so right in so many ways, but there's a lot of questions people still have. Maybe you want to talk, Ron, about this. Is, again, Ron Babin, Deputy Director, Michigan Fair Tax. Information, you can just go to mifairtax.org. Or fairtax.org for the federal plan, which links to the Michigan, but mifairtax.org. A lot's going on with here in Michigan and already has in the last couple of years. Tell me about the Michigan situation and what the status is on the proposal here in Michigan, Ron.
Okay. Well, Last year, as you mentioned, we did have a petition, the public petition ballot drive to try to put it on last November's ballot. We did not collect enough signatures to put that on the ballot. We simply didn't have enough time to be able to go through that process. And we had less than the normal 6 months. They only gave us 4 months time frame by the time they approved the language. But we are going to be reinitiating that process for the November 2010 general election if the legislature doesn't put it on the ballot by vote before that.
Yeah, they could do that even relatively soon, right?
Two-thirds vote from each chamber, and they could put it on and call a special election this year. Now, even Speaker Dillon has mentioned that he would expect that the public should have a vote in changing Michigan's tax structure, and we wholeheartedly support that idea. You know, what he may support, you know, may be different. He may want a progressive income tax or something, which we feel would be going the opposite direction. We're trying to remove it out of the income system because that increases our wholesale prices. Mm-hmm. But at least if we can get on to the ballot, we can say, look, put the Michigan fair tax on there as an option for the people. Mm-hmm. Let the people choose. How can a legislator be against having the public with a voice? Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to approve it. You know, the legislator doesn't, but they can simply put it there so the public can have a choice. So we are working through the legislature at this point to try to gather support.
And I don't think it's too complicated for the public to understand this. I mean, it will take a little bit of educating about the details because it's not just a consumption tax because there's so many problems with just that alone. I mean, people say, well, it doesn't do this or that. It is more than that. Let me just cover two issues of criticisms that I've heard from one place or another about the Michigan proposal. Maybe it applies federally too. But one is, you need a constitutional convention or a constitutional amendment to make this change.
The ballot? The
bring fair tax.
Yes, the ballot language is a constitutional change, which is right why it's required to be on the ballot and approved by the people. The legislature can't do it.
Okay, but there is, aren't we scheduled, or the legislature, I guess, could say no, every 20 years, 30 years, whatever, a constitutional convention for the state? Is that coming up, or the opportunity might be coming up in a few years?
People have been talking about it. Whether they've scheduled anything is, I don't know.
But there's no reason to wait. Right. If we love the idea,
absolutely,
as you said, we can just vote it as a constitutional amendment, actually, and be done with it. And it's so simple, folks. I mean, how long is the actual the detailed bill, which you've already worked on for the state of Michigan, is 100 pages?
Oh, no, it's not even that. It's 5 pages.
Yeah. This is the functional law, folks. It's just 5 pages.
No, it's online.
And you can see it for yourself. It's fun. It's mifairtax.org, and it is so understandable, comprehensive. You don't have to go to the 60,000-page tax code like our federal system has. Just to make it work, and you don't need any functionaries. You don't need any more people in government managing it. So, we got to have a new office building. We have to have 500 more people. Now, somebody's got to do those prebate checks.
Sure. And the Treasury Department would be challenged with that, and they already do many of that. And most of the state payments are not sent out by check anymore. They're done with electronic transfers.
Right,
so
and that could be.
The cost of that administration is very, very low.
Especially once it's set up.
That's right. Yeah. Let me point out that you mentioned before about the cost you had to pay personally in terms of doing your taxes. Nationally, it's estimated that we spend between a minimum. I mean, even opposition groups agree that the minimum we spend nationally is $250 billion, with a B, billion dollars a year in compliance cost. That's not what we're paying in taxes. That's what we spend to comply with the code. Mm-hmm. And we all pay for that in that added cost to our products.
And then, of course, there's the people that cheat or that don't fill out the taxes and the people that often do choose the fast and easy short form. They're getting gypped by the tax code. I mean, they should be really, many of them should be deducting.
Right.
They say, I can't figure it out. We'll just do the, you know, pay the whatever we owe. This is a postcard or a single small form anyway, single page at least at worst. I've never used it because even with, you know, a simple person with really no deductions, I still, because I have a house, well, it's still, I'm saving a couple thousand a year. So a lot of the people fill out the wrong form and they get, well, it's unfair, okay, to them, based on the crazy system we have now. So that complete rush of fair feeling that would be upon us if this would go into place, and the logic and the simplicity of it, it almost boggles the mind that it can't happen. I mean, that it can't be a good idea if it's so simple,
right?
In our complicated world. But in fact, it is very clear and it is revenue neutral. Nobody's losing a dollar or a penny because of the rates that are set at the outset, but it makes it very clear how much all of us are paying, and we know about it every day. And if we want our government to be leaner, if not meaner, leaner and greener, okay, and if we can do it cheaper, you know, then everybody gets together and figures out how they can bring that percentage down. That it's an easy target if we want to have savings, or hey, we want to have a big initiative, and we're going to have to raise that rate maybe from 30 to 32 to go all green, but then in 5 years we promise it'll go down to 27. I mean, you know, even federal leaders can pitch things like that, and we can all agree to it and understand it or not. It's not all this, you know, accounting books that are juggled up and down and postponing payments to the next year, and you never really know what the government's spending on some things. This is just so cool. Now, here's the other criticism, and this we have to wrap up in the next few minutes or so. Ron Baben, who is the Deputy Director of Michigan Fair Tax, MIFairTax.org, has been with us for the first half of our show today. Beyond the first half, heck with the schedule, I'm in charge here. I mentioned my name is Jay Koronek. I'm the host of the show. Hi, everybody. You remember me. I'm usually here. Okay, here was a criticism that came up in the legislature, and I know there's a good answer, but I couldn't think of one. Now, I've been reading, by the way, in answering some of the questions at the federal level, there's two books out now. One just called, I think, The Fair Tax, and one about arguments against the fair tax. No, arguments for the fair tax to meet individual challenges. And they're both basically written by Neil Bortz, B-O-O-R-T-Z, who's a talk show host, just like yours truly, but smarter. And he's been a spokesperson and involved in the campaign nationally for years. It's not his idea alone, but he's one of those communicators that...
But it's written with John Linder.
Right, John Linder. And he's the fellow, I forgot his name, he's the one that has introduced the bill into the House, including this year, John Linder, a Republican.
Yes, okay. From Georgia.
Okay, Georgia. Mm. Okay, well, here was a criticism from the state of Michigan last year that I heard someone say. They said, oh, we don't dare switch the fair tax in a bad economic year when people aren't buying so much. And of course, it's worse now than it was even earlier this year when he said this, because as a consumption tax, government would have so much less money coming in. How do you respond to that criticism?
It is such a misnomer, misunderstanding out there that people assume that the consumption like just drops off when you have the economy turn sour. If you actually look at the true statistics, okay, just take the state of Michigan alone, and you go back and look at a graph of the revenue coming in from the income tax versus the sales tax in Michigan.
Okay.
The income tax has these big swings up and down as the economy changes. Uh-huh. But the consumption tax is very, very steady. It may not have the big spikes, but it doesn't have the drops.
And it's only 6%, but right.
That's right. Yeah. And it is amazing that even if you lose your job, the revenue to the state off of your income goes to zero. But you continue to spend. Mm-hmm. You continue to spend some, whether you borrow money from friends, you take money out of your savings, you get by continuing to spend at some level. So you don't have the huge changes in the economy. Consumption is actually more stable than what the income is. It's the opposite of what most people think.
Yeah, well, that's the clear answer, and I wish I had thought of that myself before, that those are two different revenue streams. And of course, there might be an up and down, but it's nowhere near the changes that an income tax has to suffer through. So in terms of the state hurting, it's hurting largely because of income taxes have dropped down. So many people lost their jobs, income, no money coming, but those people trying to survive, maybe with money from friends or family or welfare, they still got to buy stuff with that money.
And we have a graph of that on our website.
Plus, they'd be getting those prebate checks.
That's correct. You know, I really encourage people, if somebody feels they have some opposition to this proposal, I strongly encourage them to communicate to somebody and ask their questions, because they are most likely incorrect in their assumption that they've made about why they're against it. 90% of the time, people just have a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Well, we really think it's something that everybody, all of our listeners, everybody in the state of Michigan, as well as the whole United States, should learn more about. The two books by Neil Bortz, B-O-O-R-T-Z, at Amazon.com or wherever you want to buy books. The most recent one is those specific arguments that meet some of these, you know, more technical questions that you hear people about it who are not well-informed. I have not, and I think I'm an educated person, and I don't like to think of myself as a liberal or a conservative. Okay, I'm usually not a conservative, but I think there's so much that, and then I see people like either Gravel or Kucinich and others, and Paul and Linder. there is so much going on here, and it would be so easy compared to like changing healthcare or something, so easy to see this happen.
Yeah, it would do much for our exports and in production in this country. Mike Gravel has an excellent video that he did. It's on YouTube that people can look up online. It's a really nice, quick 5-minute description, along with Mike Huckabee has a number of them too. Jay, if I can real quick, I'd like to mention the taxes at the Michigan level that we eliminate. We replace, constitutionally, replace the now the MBT, the Michigan Business Tax, the personal property tax that businesses pay, not in individual real estate.
So business
taxes.
People, listen up here.
That's right. Yeah. We're reducing their cost. The personal property tax that businesses pay, the 6-mill state education tax that businesses pay, and the personal income tax. All of those taxes go away, along with the current sales tax, and get wrapped up into one. And those other taxes cannot be replaced without a vote of the people. So it would do wonders to be able to increase exports and production in this state. And again, I encourage people to ask the questions. All our contact information is online, and we sure appreciate the opportunity to try to educate people.
Besides the educational thing, what's the next step? Now, people, number one, I know from your website, people can actually get involved right now. There is local representatives. I see there's some people mentioned here. It may not be up to date from the website. I mean, sometimes websites go up and down week to week. That we have a representative in the 14th district, which is John Conyers district. That's the east part of Dearborn. And we have a Michigan Fair Tax spokesperson coordinator for the 15th district, John Dingell's area, which is the other half or two-thirds of Dearborn, and I think includes Dearborn Heights and some other areas. And so they could get involved. There's phone numbers on MIFairTax.org. There's your name as Deputy State Director Ron Babin, and your phone number. You got sort of like the main contact number. That's the Deputy Director gets stuck with all the contacts, and the director, they got an easy ride there.
And I'll mention that we are all volunteers.
Yeah, great, cool.
And we need
so more. Are we here at WHFR, except for me. it's just a wonderful run. What's the very next thing that's going to happen? I saw something that was a little bit of a, you know, these scandal, sensational things. Somebody was going crazy on CNN or something in Chicago, and he talked about a Santini, right, and he talked about Tea Party protest of all the bailout money. It's not in favor of fair tax, but it was just saying too much money just being spent too crazily, that he wanted to do it in Chicago or something. But isn't there an organizing meeting or an issue coming up here in Michigan that people might want to know? What's the next, like, organizational thing that's coming up for Michigan Fair Tax, other than making the input to the organization and the structure and trying to get the bill to somebody in the legislature? Is there organizational meetings or information meetings coming up?
Yes, and we encourage people to sign up for our email notices on our website and get involved and sign up there to keep up to date on what's going on. And then you can be communicated through that process. You'll be communicated too in terms of what's going on in your local area. So we got meetings, because it's different in each congressional district. Mm-hmm. We got 15 congressional districts we're broken down to in the Michigan, and we've got volunteers in each area that kind of handle their own thing.
If people want to give donations, and I need to ask here too, because we won't plug it if it's not. Did you have officially a nonprofit tax status?
We do. We are a 501c6 nonprofit.
Because the government has said that they are doing something good for society.
That's right.
Or at least trying to do something good for society.
And I'll point out that we are not tax deductible. So we are staying true. We're fighting to change the tax system, and we're not. You know, we do it on a non-deductible basis.
Okay, so they can't deduct a contribution they make to
Correct.
You. No, but still, because they are a lobbyist group, they're trying to change politics, folks. So any lobbyist group, you know, in fact, sometimes there is a question even about Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village, because they have often been part of other groups that have tried to lobby for tax cuts or increases of assessments or whatever, and sometimes it goes over the edge. But in your case, you know, but you do need contributions. You are a group of just volunteers in order to keep the expenses. You have an office in Lansing, I assume, because you're trying to lobby actively the Congress. No?
No, we actually use a legislative member to try to lead things through the legislature and working on that. But other than that, we do things out in the individual districts through volunteers.
So very low overhead. So
if people want it to change, they have to get involved.
Right. right. So we can't do a commercial about donating, folks, but it's a way to find out information for free. Just go to their website, mifairtax.org, or for the sake of the federal government, just fairtax.org. And either way, I think people should get more involved with more issues, especially if, you know, there's this wind of change going on. Let's do the really good, simple changes, the fair and forthright changes, I think, now, before we get something else that hits us up. And I don't see, I'm sorry to say, Barack Obama considering any other than a minor tweaking of the 60,000-page tax code. I don't see any major changes. He's proposed major changes in some other areas, but you know, just yesterday when we saw his sort of budget proposals, but nothing about really changing the tax code. And usually people only complain around April 15th about it.
Right.
I try to complain year long because it's a central core of almost all these other issues. The business stimulus, I'm going on and on. I'm sorry, Ron. You can tell I'm a supporter, and my listeners can too. I just want our listeners to try to find out more. That's all. So thank you so much from coming from, I think you're over at Sterling Heights or something,
yep.
Coming into WHFR today. And we're going to go now to just for a moment, folks. We have this great study program in Italy. Okay, so if you don't like the taxes here, well, you won't like them in Italy either, but you don't have to pay them as a student tourist on this trip. So I just finished before the show, because of time constraints, you couldn't be here live, an interview with the person in charge of the study abroad in Italy, and we're going to feature that right now. Again, Ron, thanks so much for being with us here on the Journal.
Thank you.
World Languages area of the English division here at Henry Ford Community College, Robert Cascardo. And Robert, you're having an exciting program this summer here at Henry Ford Community College, Study Abroad in Italy is its title. First of all, I thought our listeners would like to know something about your background, because you're not just the instructor of Italian here at Henry Ford Community College, and sometimes also in the College for Lifelong Learning, Italian-related courses, but you have significant experience and knowledge about Italy yourself. And so as the sort of the tour guide, tell us about that knowledge and background of yours in regard to Italy.
Well, Jay, thanks again for having me here today. My background kind of goes back to when I was a college student and traveling around Italy. I also traveled with my family, and I've had a lot of great opportunities, fortunately, to study overseas. I studied for a summer in Florence, and I did another study program in Rome, and I did a work program in Turin, Italy. So between that and backpacking and studying and visiting family members, I developed this great passion for travel to Italy, and it's always really helped me out in my own life.
Well, I'm so excited to see that this program has begun here at Henry Ford Community College. I think it's an important component to travel, and especially to experience foreign cultures, even ancient and somewhat well-known foreign cultures like France, Italy, Germany, and so on. You're just more recently here at the college, and I've been around a long time. On and off for the last three decades, we've had study abroad programs, sometimes in music, sometimes in art, and English division has done it once or twice. I think once they might have done Italy too, but a long time ago. So it's great to see it come back. And as you were just mentioning to me before we turned on the machine here to record this, that you're hoping to continue even next year, and we'll talk more about that too. But a lot of people may be aware of tours to Hawaii or Italy or whatever, and this is going to be a group tour, so you're all together on buses or trains or whatever, and fly over back and forth on a plane, of course. But how is a study tour going to be different? How is this one going to be different than just a typical tour group, tourist type thing?
Well, Jay, that's sort of a two-part question. One of it has to do with I'm going through EF Tours, which is Education First, and they're known for their educational tours, and I actually did a tour with them to Paris not too long ago, and I was able to see firsthand how the local tour guides could give you all of the information about not only the historic culture that's so important, but a lot of contemporary things that are happening in the country. The other part to that question has to do with what I have to bring to the trip. And as my students know, I'm really passionate about everything Italian, but not just the historic part, what's going on there today, what's happening in a contemporary situation. So we'll not only go see the important museums and everything like that, but we'll hopefully go to see a contemporary art gallery, or, you know, not only just appreciate the food, but hopefully try to sneak our way into the kitchen and find out how they're actually making the food.
Yummy.
So even in my classrooms, my students know that I really use a lot of multimedia to show what's going on in Italy right now. I use a lot of YouTube and some films and music and lyrics, a little karaoke, things like that. Anything to get students familiar with the jargon and always standard Italian. We don't usually talk about dialects and stuff like that, but we want to know how people are speaking today and all of the different ways of communicating. You know, now that a lot of people are text messaging and stuff like that. Well, if you want to do it in Italian, you have to know Italian first to know their abbreviations. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to learn the language and know how people are using it today, because as we talk about often in our classes, we want to teach critical thinking skills. And I tell my students all the time, it's not my point of view that's important. It's my ability to give you the framework so that you can express your own ideas. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I try to do. And
Foreign language study is really the study of foreign cultures, too, and that's what's so very, very important in this day and age, is to understand and be able to appreciate the variety and the significances of these other cultural
That's right.
Groups.
In doing so, it helps the student build a better understanding of the global community and what's so important in the workforce today. And so another unique aspect of this is we tried to keep the price down as low as possible, because these are community college students, and we didn't want to have only the opportunity to do a full semester abroad, and that's part of the reason why it's kind of short.
We're talking here today with Professor Robert Cascardo. I'll get it out yet. Cascardo, C-A-S-C-A-R-D-O. Write that down, folks. We'll give you his direct email a little later. This is a study abroad in Italy trip that is planned for this summer 2009, June 20th to 29th. I don't think we mentioned the date before. And enrollment is underway, and March 31st is the deadline to avoid late fees for these costs. Let's talk, we'll go back to that information more, but tell me, Robert, about the itinerary, at least. I see it here on the list. There's a picture on the website.
Yes.
HFCC.edu.
We will fly into Milan and then spend a day or so in Venice. And we will go to Florence, Assisi, Sorrento, Pompeii, Roma. And there are two excursions to Pisa and Capri. Another kind of nice thing about the trip is that people who wish to stay there a little longer, maybe they have friends or relatives they wish to see, they can pay like about $100 more and extend their trip or go earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a cool option always. So, and Pompeii is, of course, the city that had the volcanic eruption a while back.
Yes, yes. And as from what I understand, only about 1/10 of it has actually been excavated. It's an amazing place to be able to see how the Romans lived 2,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And see the graffiti and, you know, statements that people made, and how much we actually have in common with them today.
So the canalways of Venice and Leaning Tower of Pisa, as well as, of course, Rome itself, is part of that. Capri, that's the Isle of Capri, right?
Yes, and that's where the Roman emperors used to go on vacation. It's a stunningly beautiful place, as well as Sorrento, where the houses are sort of clinging to the cliffs overlooking the sea.
I think Frank Sinatra did a song about the Isle of Capri somewhere. Anyway, getting back to this, so this is really exciting. How do people get more information about the study abroad in Italy for this summer, June 20th to 29th?
Well, the best way is probably to look at the WHFCC website And another way would be to contact me by email. That's rcascardo, C-A-S-C-A-R-D-O, at hfcc.edu. I will get back to you in as timely a manner as possible, usually within hours.
We'll be clear here. There is a cost involved, folks. It can be done for credit or not. The educational component will still be there, but if you need the credit and you have maybe some grants or scholarships that will cover that, that's one thing. Also, certain educational grants for students that have already applied for financial aid may also cover part of this cost, but the basic program fee is around $2,800 to $3,100, depending on the age of the person. A slight discount if you're younger because of student discounts that are in Italy. In fact, it does include lodging, two meals, round trip airfare, and two meals a day. That is, folks, not two meals for the whole 10 days. But
right.
and it does say it excludes customary gratuities. So you obviously want a tip after a meal and maybe the hotel and so on, but everybody wants to take some pocket money with them too. So think about $3,000, but it could be a good deal less if you're a student and you have some funds of one sort or another that's already been allotted to you.
Well, that's another thing that has to do with, you know, my experience as a college student and backpacking and everything across Europe. I can take you to supermarkets and stuff like that and find you sandwiches, and there are a lot of ways that you can save money.
Now, just in wrapping up here, we'll give the information about the study abroad in Italy one more time. Remember, March 31st, to avoid the late fees, but we want to talk about next year, too, very briefly. 2010, we want to do this every year if possible, and you can even find out what's happening from Robert Cascardo, for next year, too. So if you can't do it this year at all, now's the time to make plans and to and talk to Robert about the trip to Italy for next year, the study abroad in Italy next year, which is going to be focusing a little different itinerary, the southern Italy, you said.
Exactly. Next year will be Rome to Sorrento down to Sicily. And I'm really excited about that because I've been all throughout most of Italy, but I've never had a chance to go to Sicily. And we will be seen a lot of different places, but you can actually save $100 on your trip if you enroll in that program with a $95 deposit before March 31st, 2009.
This year, yes.
This year.
Mm-hmm. And that's maybe an incentive for some folks. A lot of people like to plan their summers a little bit in advance, if only to save money, too, a little bit.
Well, exactly. That's one of the major reasons as well, because it gives you a little bit extra time to save up for the trip, and there's an auto pay program where you can pay online little payments at a time, and it gives you more time to get your financial aid in order.
So, thank you very much. This is Professor Robert Cascardo from the Italian program, from World Studies and the English Division here at Henry Ford Community College. Study abroad in Italy. Great concept. I'm sure it's going to be a great trip this year, June 20th to 29th. For more information, go to the HFCC website, hfcc.edu, and search for Study Abroad in Italy. It is on that website. Or send an email to R, for Robert, R. Cascardo, that's R-C-A-S-C-A-R-D-O, at hfcc.edu. So thank you very much, Robert, or grazie.
Grazie, grazie mille. Thank you to you, Jay.
I almost got it right. Thank you.
Oh, you did great.
Good luck with the program.
Thanks.
And we're back live here at WHFR for the WHFR Journal, local news and views. Local news and alternative views, too. Things you can't hear anywhere else on your dial or any other station. That's what our show is all about. That's what our station is all about. In terms of great local music, Detroit-based musicians, well, that's pretty much all of our music shows, as much as we can find. And coming up at 2 o'clock is Highway 61. Today it's going to be hosted by yours truly, as they say in the radio business. The professor, Roger White, will be coming in at 4 o'clock. Joanne had a death in her extended family and had to drive up to Flint today for the funeral service, unfortunately. So that's where she's going to be. But we'll do the best we can, continuing to play the best in local blues. And, of course, we wish good luck to Robert Cascardo. Sorry, Robert. Cascardo. I said it. Say it fast. Cascardo. and their program. He tells me, again, if you wanted to get more information, rcascardo, R-C-A-S-C-A-R-D-O, at hocc.edu, about the study abroad trip in Italy. There is a sort of a get-together information session that anybody can attend that's interested in going, as well as those that have already signed up. It's going to be this Sunday, March 1st. So more information, you need to get in touch with Professor Cascardo and go to the website first, and then send an email quick, and you can find out about that information session too. But it's not required you go there. Again, it's March 31st. You'd avoid late fees for this year's trip, and even get an extra bonus if you'd like to plan for their trip to the South Italy exclusively next year in 2010. So I think that's a cool idea. If you haven't been to Europe at all or to Italy at all, you know, all those countries over there are all a little bit different each. They all have their own little languages. Even France, I think, if you overlay it on Michigan, is smaller than Michigan in terms of square footage. So, and we got more trees left than they do. But Italy, I think, is, I don't know my geography, not too much bigger or smaller than France in terms of square miles, just that couple islands there and so on. So anyway, that's the additional information about study abroad in Italy. And we thank Professor Cascardo to be able to come in and get that recording done, which we'll feature again in a couple of weeks on this show if you missed the information today. Remember, our shows also here are available by podcast. Go to whfr.fm, and you can go to the big button that says Journal. That's right. That's what this is, the WHFR Journal Show. And by date, that Friday date, you can find out which one you want to listen to, and then listen to it right then at that moment, or it'll download to your computer as an MP3 file, which you can take with you anywhere. Listen to it before you go to sleep late at night from your iPod. Aha, sure, not likely. Okay, let's see if we can just toss in time is flying today. Looking at some of the Dearborn local papers, I'm going to go so fast, but, our two papers, Dearborn Times-Herald and the Dearborn Press and Guide. In the Dearborn Times-Herald and the Press and Guide for this week from February 25th. Adre Appliance is closing up. Adre Appliance TV, Photo, and Sound Center, as we used to call it, has decided to close its doors. It's possible to reopen in some smaller location. I'd say don't bet on it, but what do I know? It seems that the owners, Louise Adre and her daughter, Debbie, are looking to retire. And although they're not facing any financial difficulties, it says here in the story, according to George Bedner, their vice president and general manager, and great friend of WHFR over the years. We're going to miss them terribly, and not just for their various financial support, as they also gave to a lot of local intramural sports teams, too. But we wish everybody associated with Adre well in the future. And they're doing sort of, I guess you might call a retirement sale, they say, over the next couple of weeks, selling off everything at the store. So just goodbye to our friends there. Also goodbye to Harry Miller Florist on Michigan Avenue. I just was walking in East Dearborn there aimlessly, and another closed building. Duh, it's the place I always used to send flowers from. So apparently a younger person in the Harry Miller family decided not to continue with the business, that he's already living out of town anyway, and maybe business wasn't that good. I don't know. So sorry for them. And then I see last thing here, and then we got to move to blues music for you people tuning in to want to hear blues, that JRC, the parent company, the Press and Guide, is filing a reorganization plan. Journal Register Company owns the Dearborn Press and Guide and other papers. They intend to continue to operate as usual, and they don't anticipate any business interruption during the restructuring. What is the restructuring? Bankruptcy, folks. Chapter 11. The company is going through bankruptcy proceedings, and who knows where that's going to turn up. And I hope it doesn't mean like in San Francisco, where it looks like in the next month they might lose their only daily paper, the San Francisco Chronicle, the flagship of the Hearst newspaper chain, They can't seem to sell it. They can't make money. They're going to shut the doors. The 12th largest city in the U.S. will have no local daily paper. In Dearborn, we got two papers right now, but maybe, sorry to say, it might only be one. So that's not on the front page. It's on the back business section of the Press and Guide about JRC, parent company of Press and Guide, files reorganization plan. And they file for bankruptcy, folks. They're bankrupt. Jeez, things are tough all over, aren't they? Well, take care out there. Let's keep stirring things up. Let's go immediately to, because it is 2 o'clock, 2:01, I see, as the clock on the wall says on the counter here. And this is WHFR Dearborn. It is time, oh, so excited, for Highway 61.
Highway 61,